Welcome to Unbreaking Birth, a podcast designed to pull back the curtain,
literally and figuratively,
on what can happen in the medical system. I'm Hehe, founder of Tranquility by Hehe and creator of the Birth Lounge.
And I'm Megan, a UT Health family nurse practitioner graduate specializing in women's health and previous labor and delivery nurse.
And with 16 years of combined experience, we're here to make sure you are informed as possible when having a baby in the United States.
It's not new to anyone that the United States medical system is broken, but there are ways for you to stay in control of your healthcare and be collaborative with your provider.
We will teach you how to be an active participant in your care and be your best own advocate.
You'll hear from medical professionals that prioritize patient experience, consensual care, and evidence-based medicine. You'll also hear stories from people who experience the broken parts of the system firsthand.
The more informed you are, the less anxiety you'll have.
And the more empowered you'll feel.
Let's unbreak birth together. Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Unbreaking Birth podcast. Today, we're talking about the final piece of our series of mother-baby-friendly hospitals. And today we're tackling the topic of breastfeeding-friendly specifically. So part of being a mother-baby-friendly hospital is actually also meeting all of the requirements of being a breastfeeding-friendly hospital. And Megan, I don't know about you, but I don't have a single hospital that meets these requirements. There are a couple of them that are absolutely, I can't even believe they're on the list because no hospital practices that. And so it was just really shocking to me to see them written out when not a single hospital that I'm aware of practices this way. So welcome to the show, you guys. Let's dive in. Megan, take it away. What are the 10 things that hospitals need to be doing to be considered breastfeeding friendly?
Yeah. Hey, I agree with you that I don't know who is doing all of these things. So, okay. Number one, is that hospitals will have a written breastfeeding policy that is routinely communicated to all healthcare staff. And I'm just going to jump into number two is also that they will train all healthcare staff in necessary skills to implement this policy. And personally, as a labor and delivery nurse, my breastfeeding training was limited to 8 hours of following a lactation nurse at the hospital around. And sometimes we were helping latch. Sometimes we were giving like formula recommendations. Sometimes we were discussing risk factors of potentially not producing much milk. And I don't know that I really felt like, I don't think I learned anything that helped me help moms latch in the first hour after their birth in those 8 hours. And that was the only training I've ever had formally in this realm.
And was that in nursing school or while you had already been hired?
So I was already hired. I was a labor and delivery nurse, but like in orientation. I guess I will backtrack to nursing school because I had a phenomenal women's health nurse as a teacher, and she's actually a nurse midwife, and she just started a doctoral nurse midwifery program at University of Tennessee. And so I've had so much good experience through her, and I did actually get to attend some lactation classes to count as some clinical hours when I was in nursing school, and got to do things like go to non-hospital sponsored birth education classes as some clinical hours. And so I did have that background, but that also wasn't while I had this kind of job. You know, I was 23 years old, not working as a nurse yet. Labor and delivery isn't my first job out of nursing school. And then when I started in this role, it was like a few weeks in, I followed a lactation person for 8 hours. And then like, bam, I'm good to go to be people's breastfeeding support for their 2 hours after birth.
And so actually in the L&D room, a lot of it is about confidence and how you present this information. If you come across as a confident nurse, like you know what you're doing, first-time parents, most of them will just believe you outright because of your title, because you're a nurse. And actually behind the curtain, you have 8 hours of shadowing somebody.
Honestly, yeah. Glorified shadowing for sure. I did not feel confident at all. And I always wanted to support people in that. And I always felt like I don't feel like I was somebody that pushed formula and things like that, or like gave people, nipple shields that didn't need them and these kind of things. But it also felt like this gap where I felt like I could be more helpful and I didn't know how to be, kind of thing. So I really had to self-teach myself, and coworkers that had worked there for a long time, kind of getting some other people's knowledge and experience, but I had to do a lot of reading and online searching myself to be able to support people in that way.
So continuing education for breastfeeding is not part of a nurse's CEU requirements. I assume it can be. And to be clear, it's not part of this list, you guys. So the World Health Organization does not say that nurses should have any sort of upkeep in their education concerning breastfeeding. But Megan, do you know if individual hospitals or units usually require that or not really?
No, I think the only update in breastfeeding education that we had was maybe a 1 hour CEU where we updated something in our policy that was about hand expression for NICU babies being born, because we are a high risk hospital. Otherwise, no. And yeah, of course it doesn't say this explicitly, but how do you maintain healthcare workers being policy driven, educationally based, and making evidence-based decisions if you are not updating that? Evidence changes. We learn new information. That's irresponsible for that not to be part of it.
Totally.
I'll jump on to number three. Inform all pregnant women about the benefits and management of breastfeeding.
Yeah, so this one really gets me. Here's my deal with this one. This is not sufficed with a 5 to 10 minute conversation directly after your baby is born while you're still like processing what the hell just happened. People are throwing information at you. You're trying to make sure your bleeding is good. You're trying to understand what's going on with your placenta. You're trying to make sure that your partner is part of this experience too, and really just be in the moment. And someone is trying to, you know, shove your baby on your boob and tell you the quick benefits of breastfeeding. Truly, this deserves a whole 45 minute, hour, 90 minute slot for all new parents who have any remote goals of breastfeeding. It should be part of their prenatal care before you are in labor, before your baby gets here. You are sat down and really get to ask your questions and go through the ins and outs and weigh the pros and cons and understand the complications that may arise with breastfeeding. And for me, that's where I get hung up on number three, to inform all the people of the benefits and the management. We just don't do that justice, not even a sliver. And I truly, truly believe deep in my heart that it is a huge reason that so many people give up breastfeeding before they're actually ready, because no one properly prepared them for it. It's something that we spend an entire prenatal on with our Tranquility by Hihi clients, and our breastfeeding success rates are incredibly high compared to the general population. And I believe a lot of that is due to them having the preparation and, you know, properly being able to expect what is to come when it comes to feeding their human from their body.
That's amazing. I have a question for you in that realm. So I think some hospitals, I think it's commonplace that they might make people sign a formula consent. What do you think about that?
Oh my God, I've never heard of that. And that's total bullshit. That is absolutely insane. So first of all, consent is not a piece of paper. You can't like sign consent away. Consent is a conversation and it should be happening for every single individual decision that is being made. That is every test, procedure, every touch. Can I touch you? Can I take your temperature? Would you mind if I get your blood pressure? It's been a couple hours from your last cervical exam. Are you interested in another one? Here are the reasons that we would like for you to have one. Consent is not a piece of paper. Also, how are you going to consent to someone feeding your baby when you don't even know what the situation is going to be after they get here?
Or, okay, that is the thing that does happen too. But what do you think about the education being, if somebody is, say they're exhausted post-labor, or they, I don't know, whatever reason they have, they want their infant to be supplemented. What do you think about the conversation, quote unquote, being that you have to sign a supplementation consent for your baby to be fed? And that suffices as you being medically informed.
I mean, I guess it goes back to what was the conversation leading up to that? Did someone really have the whole full conversation with you and say the true pros and cons? So pro, formula gives you a little bit more freedom than breastfeeding does because you don't have to make it from your body. Other people can feed your baby. They're both readily available for the most part, unless you are struggling with supply issue. And then that might be a reason to give formula, right? Arguably, for every formula bottle we use, we're essentially tricking your boobs into thinking that your baby didn't need to eat. And so it will negatively impact your supply. Mm-hmm. So there is a give and take here of striking a balance of how do we use formula as a way to support this parent's either sleep or mental health or their freedom to be able to let other people feed their baby. Maybe they have to return the work. Maybe they want their partner to do it in combination with still allowing them to choose and achieve their breastfeeding goals. Because so easily we say like, we can just give your baby formula and you can just sleep. But did you tell that parent at some point between the time I see you now and next, I need you to wake up at least for 10 minutes and hand pump, or I need you to at least do 8 minutes in the electric pump, right? Anybody talking to you about that? Or are they just letting you sleep for 6 hours and we're telling your body that your brand new newborn doesn't need to eat for 6 hours? Of course, your body's not going to make milk. It just thinks your newborn slept for 6 hours, right? Exactly. There is a conversation to be had.
I totally agree. I guess, yeah, where I was going with that is I think it should be a prerequisite course or like something that's offered. It's just not readily accessible. Like you said, unless it's in courses that are like privatized, like courses like yours, like courses that you have to seek out yourself, you know?
Yep.
Doesn't seem to be readily accessible. That brings us to number 4. So hospitals have to help mothers initiate breastfeeding within half an hour of birth, which any hospital I know is within an hour. And that's still like, I feel like loosely held, but that's the goal.
Because it seems fast to you, right? Doesn't 30 minutes
after birth exactly.
seem like insanely fast? So that was my reaction when I read that too. I was like, wow, 30 minutes. That is, wow. That baby's popping out and we are sticking just a boo in his mouth. Exactly. So sometimes, you guys, it is actually normal for your baby to like take a couple hours to look around and be alert and kind of absorb what just happened to them. And they just went through like a really crazy journey. Sometimes they don't eat right after birth. It is normal for them to want to latch within 30 minutes, 60 minutes, 90 minutes of birth, but also sometimes it could be 2 hours and that's okay. There's nothing to freak out about, but this struck me the same exact way. I was like, wow, half an hour. That is Super Mario fast.
That's so fast. Yeah. I would be so curious to see the research based in that decision.
Same.
Crazy. Okay. Number 5 is that hospitals will show mothers how to breastfeed and how to maintain lactation even if they should be separated from their infants?
So I think this really goes back to giving parents a healthy foundation of what we're expecting. So a lot of people will think if their baby is in the NICU that when their baby returns to them, their boobs will just pick up. Or if their baby needs to spend a few hours away, that their boobs will just pick up. And that sometimes can happen, but a lot of times we see a disruption happen with that separation. And so what you should be doing actually is we want to be stimulating your boobs in the same fashion that your baby would be. And that means that your baby would be latching every 45 minutes to 90 minutes right after birth. And so we want you to be doing warm compresses and hand massages and haka-ing, you know, attaching the haka, and even maybe some hand expression or some hand pump expression to get your colostrum going. So at that point, your milk hasn't transitioned to what we traditionally think of breast milk. So it's still colostrum, but we still want you to be stimulating your breast every 45 to 90 minutes. So once an hour to once every hour and a half when you're separated from your baby, so that when your baby gets there, your body isn't like, oh, what, where's this baby come from for the last 8, 12, 24 hours, you know, up to a couple of days, we haven't needed to keep anything alive. That will absolutely result in some disruptions in your breastfeeding journey for sure.
Absolutely. I feel like this topic could be a whole episode itself. And if you don't know the answer to this question, I will be motivated to find out when we do that. Do you have a best practice or know any evidence about maybe the best way for these mamas? What comes to my mind is preterm mamas the most, but of course, any baby separated fits the bill. That is the best way for them to get this colostrum. Like in the hospital, I guess we do show them how to. It's with a pamphlet inside a Ziploc bag with medicine cups and like,
syringes.
Yes. Oh my God. I was about to say suction cups. I was like, that's not it. Syringes. Going to the clinic for a month and you don't remember what a syringe is. Okay. Syringes. So is that what's considered the best practice, or are there better ways to do that?
Yeah. So we always recommend that our people are looking into colostrum harvesting before labor. However, you shouldn't do it too early in pregnancy. And if you are going to choose to do it in pregnancy, you want to be having a conversation with your provider about that first, because it does run the risk of sending you into labor, which is why we don't suggest you do it too early in labor or in pregnancy. As for colostrum harvesting for preemies, Yeah, that's it. Now you can still expect your milk to transition anywhere from 2 to 5 days after your baby is born, even with a premature birth. You're still looking at that same time frame, but that colostrum is going to be so much more important for a preemie than a term baby, because we want your preemie to be getting all of the nutrients in your colostrum before we're supplementing with formula.
And that brings us to number 6, which is give newborn infants no food or drink other than breast milk unless medically indicated.
So this one is really interesting to me, and I find that it varies from hospital to hospital of how pushy they are for formula, but this is not what we're finding in most American hospitals. They push formula like nobody's business, which is so interesting, because you would think that for such a nation of like such deep knowledge and monetary resources, we would be encouraging people to breastfeed their infants, because we just know that there are actual, and this is not to shame anyone who chooses formula feeding, but there are, you know, definite benefits of breastfeeding over formula for your child's health. They are
bodies, ear infections, all kinds of upper respiratory infections, allergies, like any kind of illness. And like, yeah, that again, not to shame, I haven't had a baby. Who knows what I will and won't choose or be capable of. I am not in that position. Yeah, same. But yeah, I agree with you that it's so interesting that that is the system in the United States. When, yeah, we seem to be breastfeeding forward, that we are having these hospital initiatives, and we don't have strict laws in most states about things like that. We're supposed to be positive about that, women empowerment, all of this. And the World Health Organization actually says that formula companies are not supposed to be advertised or pushed, for lack of a better term, by medical professionals. And this is so commonplace in the US hospitals. Like, it will be like, hey, we have this Similac. Do you want to do this? Or, hey, we have this brand. Should we give this to your baby? Or, hi, we can give you these samples or whatever. And that was something I learned from you, actually, Hehe. I did not even know that that was a World Health Organization stance and platform, because that is foreign to me.
Yeah, one of the things that kills me is when you have families that are 100% dedicated to breastfeeding and they leave the hospital and hospital staff gives them days worth of formula samples. It just can feel super demeaning. And in those really, really chaotic and intense and sometimes vulnerable and weak moments of new parenthood, it can be so easy to succumb to the pressure of formula. And I am a firm believer. If you visit my Instagram, it's at Trinkled by Hehe, you're going to see I'm pro formula if that's what you choose. I do believe that having one can of formula on hand when you first bring your baby home can be a lifesaver in so many situations. What I am vehemently against is hospitals sending home people with tons and tons and tons of samples where it actually does work against you, at least mentally and emotionally. It's almost like they're on you, on your counter, like staring back at you, peer pressuring you.
Yeah. And I feel like you thinking that you should have a can of formula at home really goes hand in hand with the other stances that we talked about. Like, will an emergency batch of formula ruin your breastfeeding? No. Will, if you need a few hours more of sleep at night, a couple weeks in, and you need your husband or your mother-in-law or your partner, whoever that is, to feed your baby formula so you can do that, that's not going to mess you up long-term. But right, if you go home in those very vulnerable early days, and that's something that's staring you in the face, like you said, and your baby might be fussy and it might have nothing to do with eating and feeding. And if you feel like, oh my God, my baby might not be getting enough, I just need to try this, most people would try it, right?
I'm even thinking in the first 48 hours after you come home from the hospital, when it gets really, really hard and your milk is probably still transitioning in and your baby is going through that sensory disruption of like, oh my God, what has just happened? And also like, I've transitioned from the hospital to home, and you and your partner are probably so dog tired from labor and trying to take in all the information and educational support that you've had in the hospital in the last 2 to 5 days. When you get home, your whole family goes through this like sensory meltdown, and it's almost like you guys have to crash and burn together in order to like build yourselves back up together. Every single family goes through it. In the Trinkled by Hehe community, we call this the 48-hour freakout. But it is, yeah, it's so hard that when that 48-hour freakout hits, sometimes you make decisions that you wouldn't otherwise, and a lot of times that decision is to introduce formula, and then people have all sorts of big feelings, negative emotions about it later. When if you had a lot more encouragement from your hospital staff to give breastfeeding an honest go and keep trying and be patient, and it's a learning curve and it's a dyad between you and your baby that you have to learn, I think a lot more people would give themselves grace, where right now we're pushing formula on people and it makes them all feel like a failure, to be honest.
Yeah. And I want to push that even further than the hospital system, because where is the support in that, in our medical community, in our government, in our society, like where are the resources for like home health visits during that time, or public lactation support during that time? Like, I think it's so much bigger than just hospitals, because that should be available to anybody and everybody. And it's just not. You're going home from the hospital, you're exhausted, you're going through this transition, and your baby's cluster feeding, and you're like, I don't know what to do.
Oh, you mean a 1-6 week appointment is not good enough? It doesn't suffice? Is that what you're trying to say? That's weird.
No, I definitely,
for some, I'm hearing this.
No. Oh, I wish that like we could have group support all the time, that we could, and that's the thing. That's something I'm trying to learn about, because there are insurances that cover things like that. How do we get services like this more accessible? And if they're out there, how do we shout those services from the rooftops? So if you're a service like that, you know anybody like that, hit us up. We want to know about it. We want to talk to you. We want our people to know about it too. So let us know, because I want to know too. Okay, number 7. Practice rooming in, that is, allow mothers and infants to remain together 24 hours a day.
So pretty much all hospitals that I know do this. I'm not aware of any hospitals that routinely separate moms and babies, or parents and babies, directly after birth in order to put a baby in a nursery. We have seen that definitely during COVID for COVID protocols, but in order just to put the baby in the nursery, that is pretty much an antiquated practice. Would you agree?
Yeah, for sure. 100%. I do run into people, I feel like it's usually older nurses or parents, who definitely don't want their baby taken away from them, but they want that option. My hospital actually did have that option, kind of limited basis, 3 or 4 hours at a time kind of thing. What do you think about that? Do you think parents should have that option to have that support in that separation? Or do you think that's kind of harmful, or what do you think?
No, I love it. So I love that when you have the extra help at the hospital, as long as someone is supporting you and helping you understand how that's going to impact your breastfeeding goals and what you need to do in lieu of having your baby room in with you. I love those short spurts, especially overnight. Hospital staff is already awake. It's basically a built-in postpartum doula. Like, they're already awake. They're not sleeping. Let them take care of your baby. You and your partner sleep. Have them bring your baby in every 3 hours, every 4 hours, maybe every 4 hours works for you. And you wake up at that 2 hour mark and do 10 minutes of hand pumping. That works, you guys. That is plenty. Feed your baby, hand them off. At the 2 hour mark, you wake up, do 10 minutes of hand pumping. At 4 hours, you're nursing your baby again. You send them back away. At 6 hours, you wake and do 10 minutes of hand pumping. And at 8 hours, they bring your baby back and you start your day. So I love it. It's short and it is supportive of sleep and mental health. And it, in combination with proper breastfeeding education, can be supportive of the breastfeeding journey too, while getting those parents some much needed rest.
That's cool. I agree. I haven't been in postpartum before. Like, I haven't been a postpartum nurse before. So I don't know if that educational piece is there or not. I do know that it's the short spurts, and I think that that's great too. Would love the educational piece to be there if it's not. And I guess the flip side of the coin is, sometimes I think if it's abused, it can make your life going home harder. I guess abuse isn't the right word. You're not like taking advantage of anybody to use it if you're using it, but I always tell people, labor and delivery is like, rely on me as much as you need to. Ideally, we were one-to-one. Like, I am yours, you are mine, I will do anything you want me to do, et cetera, right? But in postpartum, a lot of times there's like 3 couplets or even 4 couplets, and kind of think of those people as your helping hands, or like somebody, if you've tried to troubleshoot, to bounce other things off of, kind of like use them as a like a support beam or something, but like when you need it, so that you can get used to trusting yourself and your partner, because you're going to be the ones at home by yourselves.
Yeah. If you send your baby away 18 out of the 24 hours that you're awake, in the, you know, 2 or 3 days you're at the hospital, you're going to have a rude awakening when you get home with your newborn. You really are. And again, that's not to shame anybody for making that choice. If that's truly right for you and your partner, then go for it. What I'm saying is, it's, you're going to have a hard landing when you come home.
Yeah. Just know what you're getting into. Like, really? If you need that time, take it, but just like use it wisely, because buckle just up. Know. Yeah, exactly. Buckle up, buttercup. Okay. let's see. We're on number 8, I think. Yes. Okay. Encourage breastfeeding on demand.
Yeah, this is not what we see. So in the Tranquility by Hehe community, we actually have this big, huge running joke of an on-demand schedule and then the hospital schedule. Hospitals are notorious for telling you to feed your baby every 3 hours around the clock. And I cannot stress to you enough, newborn babies can rarely go 3 hours. They are usually hungry before that, especially before your milk has transitioned to traditional breast milk and it is still colostrum. Your baby's going to need to eat way more frequent than 3 hours. It is very typical for a baby up to a month old to need to eat every 90 minutes to 2 hours, you guys. It is, that 3 hours is so unrealistic, and it is not what we consider developmentally appropriate, which means what you're doing with your child is developmentally in line with their age and their development and their emotional state and how they can receive information. Developmentally appropriate means that it is all that stuff. And having your newborn go 3 hours between feedings is not developmentally appropriate.
Yeah, that's more like 4 to 6 week-ish time frame.
Exactly. Exactly. And
I will say shout out to my hospital on that one, because we have signs in all of our postpartum rooms that say, watch your baby, not the clock. And it's like a clock that doesn't move hands. So they're saying like, yeah, watch your baby cues. Watch what cues your baby is giving you that they are hungry and want to feed, and respond to those instead of putting your baby on a time clock for that. I do always tell new parents, I don't know if you would agree with this, I always say, like, when I see them in labor and delivery, so I'm talking about fresh parents, if your baby hasn't woken up to feed in 3 to 4 hours, like, wake them up to feed then. Otherwise, though, like, yeah, watch them. But if they're sleeping for like 3, 3.5 hours, like, it's time to get a little colostrum in there or some breastfeeding session, or at least try. But otherwise, yeah, I feel like babies, the times that I've held moms longer in labor and delivery because of staffing issues, I feel like babies are typically one to feed every 45 minutes to 2 hours.
Yep. I agree with that too. So in the first 2 weeks, your baby's going to dip down a little bit below their birth weight. That is totally normal. If you had an epidural or an induction or a lot of IV fluids, we can expect that dip to be a little bit deeper, probably because your baby's birth weight was a little bit artificially elevated at the time of birth. But then by that 2 week mark, they should be back up to their birth weight. And that is the point where in our community, we typically tell people they don't have to worry about waking up their babies because we're back to that birth weight. But before that, while we're still seeing them dip down, you shouldn't be alarmed or worried or anxious. 10 to 12% is actually totally normal. 10% for babies that were unaugmented, meaning no induction or IV fluids or epidural, but 12 to 13% is actually normal for anything that is augmented in your labor.
I always had the thought about IV boluses, especially it being different. So good to know that statistic specifically, but yeah, to piggyback on that, brown adipose tissue, your baby has it, your baby's born with it, they're supposed to use it, they're supposed to go through it, they have that as a support system to feed on, and your colostrum, even if you don't think there's a lot, it's like so much fat, so much calories, so many goodies. And so even tiny little ounces are doing so much work, and your baby's tummy is the size of like the quarter. So
Your colostrum is enough.
Gold. It's gold. Okay, number 9 is do not give any artificial teats, which is a funny word to me, sorry. pacifiers, or also called dummies or soothers, to breastfeeding infants. That should be a hospital policy according to this.
Yeah, I don't know if I so much agree with this, but I'm a firm believer, just because of my background in human development, that your baby's never going to confuse a cold, you know, silicone plastic nipple with your nipple. Does it make their suck a little bit stronger? Sometimes parents will report this, absolutely. I am much more in the camp of introducing a bottle too early will disrupt breastfeeding way more than a pacifier will. I'm actually pretty pro pacifier, and I don't have limitations on when we should introduce this. So this isn't one that gets my check of approval, but I hear where the World Health Organization is coming from on this one 100%.
Don't really agree with it, but like you kind of like you said, but I guess interestingly, I have a little bit of a more conservative stance maybe to you. I kind of think I'm in the camp that if you're able to avoid it and it's not causing you stress or any disruption at home, I think it's best to avoid for like 2-ish weeks or you know, a few weeks if you can. Not that I believe that your baby would be truly nipple confused versus a pacifier versus your actual nipple. I just feel like it completely eliminates that and just kind of like helps you establish breastfeeding and that is the comfort thing. But yeah, I don't think this is like, this isn't a hill I live and die on.
Same.
Okay, number 10 is that hospitals will foster the establishment of breastfeeding support groups and refer mothers to them on discharge from the clinics or hospitals.
I actually think this is a great place to wrap up because it's so indicative of the American culture of, you know, just the thoughts that we have around women's body and the value of motherhood and the value of being that sole provider for a tiny human, which is not much. Our country just doesn't value it very much at all. And we can really see this play out in breastfeeding because breastfeeding support is not readily accessible. And finding unbiased care for breastfeeding and nursing is so hard, it's almost impossible. Parents will report that, you know, you mentioned this earlier, but lactation consultants will just suggest they give formula or throw a nipple shield at it or, you know, tell them to exclusively pump, just totally off left field from what this parent's goals are without actually taking a step back to say, how can I best support this parent on an individual basis to help them and their individual baby reach their goals? We just never find it. We never find it. So, you know, support groups are hard to come by and the hospital sponsored ones are often very biased. And, you know, hospitals will sometimes be able to make money off of hosting that group. They get subsidized for giving community resources like that or hosting community resources. Yeah. Or sometimes they even charge. Absolutely. Don't for one second think that, you know, things like this are not for profit. Absolutely, they are in some sense. It may not be you that's footing the bill, but somebody is getting paid. There is some sort of money to be made in this stuff. And for me, that's the most saddening part about this is that our country really is in a place that we could just unbiasedly support people in their choice and really, really make a difference in breastfeeding, which would change so much for our nation. And we just choose not to do it. All right. So all in all, it's just unbelievable to see the World Health Organization write this stuff out so plainly, black and white. And then when we really kind of think back and evaluate what hospitals are offering patients and clients, it's like, it's just not there. They're so misaligned and disjointed. It's unbelievable. If you're a nursing parent out there and you are feeling pressured to stop nursing and introduce formula, please know that you don't have to. There is support out there. There are tons of people who are ready to support you. Megan is one. I am one. Erica Campbell, the Milk Manual, is one. We'll actually link our favorite Instagram platforms and people here for you, and a few other resources. Jack Newman is awesome. The book, The Womanly Art of Breastfeeding, will change your life. And if you are out there ready to stop your nursing journey and introduce formula, and you feel confident and informed on that decision, we see you too. Everyone's welcome at our table, and there's never room for any judgment or shame here, but it is important to know that when you are choosing facilities, there are requirements and criteria that you should be looking for in order to understand if that facility is going to be able to help you reach your goals for your birth and your postpartum journey. All right, next week, we are going to be talking about if Megan and I saw you on the sidewalk or were stopped in an elevator with you for 5 minutes, what would be the things that we say? We're calling this one The Hills We Live and Die On. And I promise you, you are not going to want to miss this one. See you next time. Bye.
Bye, guys.